Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
You bet he can! Into the gap in left center! Not a question of if, the question is who and when. Tonight it's Puig in the ninth.
Joe Davis with a call on the Dodgers television network as Yasiel Puig delivers the game winner. The Dodgers have a new hero every night. Last night it was Puig's turn to deliver the game winner for the Dodgers. It's impressive what they're doing. They've already won over 80 games. They're on track to maybe winning 116 games this season.
Yes, that's the question that was kicked around yesterday with Sports Illustrated's Tom Verducci on the Dan Patrick Show, the Dodgers versus the field.
Well, it is. I think it is the Dodgers versus the field. I do. I think it, at this point, that's what it comes down to. Dodgers versus the field. They've been that good, and they're getting, I mean, they're getting Clayton Kershaw back. They have not lost a single step with him out. You want to talk about remarkable? That's remarkable. He's normally under the category of one of those guys you cannot afford to lose. And guess what? They're still winning. That's impressive.
Yeah, they keep that winning streak going in the postseason, and this is the postseason that Clayton Kershaw fans can talk about for decades to come, and maybe even just say, well, it's fate. Planets aligned for them.
Well, I don't think it's a I don't think it's an issue at all. For them at this point. Because I thought Kershaw was good in the postseason last year. To be honest with you, I really did. I thought he was good. I thought was, you know, so. My complaint about him before is that he's a great regular season pitcher, has not been a great postseason pitcher. I think that was accurate. I think he's also thrown his heart and soul into the postseason. It just hasn't worked out for him. Well, last year, he was really good in the postseason. So I think that part now is off the boards. Really, really good. Okay, I've got to tell you about one. Last night, Fenway Park. Did you see the first pitch, the ceremonial first pitch?
I did. I was this close to tweeting it last night, but I didn't.
Well, here's what happened.
I had it ready. I was thinking about it. And I kind of, you know, you kind of do the 2 second, you know, 2 second thing. Oh, you know, wait before you hit send. But yeah, it was. I did get a laugh out of it.
Well, the 1967 Boston Red Sox were saluted last night. 50 years later, they have always referred to that team as the Impossible Dream Team. And the Red Sox, I mean, you see now that they're playing to, you know, usually 90-95% capacity, right? Every night. Well, that team in 1967, 50 years ago, helped create everything you've seen the last 50 years in terms of excitement around that franchise. Because before that, they had none. I mean, yeah, they drew well in the 40s and into the early 50s when they were challenging the Yankees. They could never get over the top against the Yankees except in 46. But then they started just sliding back and becoming a second division team. And in the 60s, they became a team that was at or near last place, and they weren't drawing flies, Sean. I mean, when the famous Ted Williams home run in 1960 in his final at-bat, There are only 10,000 people at the game. I mean, Boston is, at this point, is not a good baseball town. And they finished in 10th place in 65, I think. And in 66, they finished in 9th. Not good. Well, 67 rolls around. Now, opening day at Fenway Park, opening day, the Red Sox had 11,000 fans at the game, Fenway. That's it. 11,000. Because nobody's excited about it. There's nothing to be excited about. Well, suddenly they start winning. And in late July into early August, I think it was all in late, like the last 10 days of July, they go on the road for a 10-game road swing, right? And they win all 10 games. 10-game road trip. They win all 10 games. So, they go fly back into Logan. They got 5,000 people waiting for them at Logan. Can't believe it. And they're in this tight pennant race. They're coming up with big wins here and there. It's the White Sox, the Twins, the Tigers, and the Red Sox. Four teams fighting it out, changing places every day as to who's in first place. And on the last day of the season, the Red Sox won it. They beat the Twins, and the Angels beat the Tigers, and the Red Sox won it. It was their first pennant in 21 years. They carry Jim Lomborg off the field. They go, and the reason they did the ceremony last night is the St. Louis Cardinals were in town. The Cardinals beat the Red Sox in 7 games in the World Series, led by Bob Gibson. All right, now the Red Sox as a franchise, the Jimmy Fund, which is the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute to battle pediatric cancer, has been their charity for a long time. Well, remember 1967, nobody's making money. I mean, nobody's making money. Maybe Yaz was. Yastrzemski was making some money. Everybody else, no. A whole bunch of young guys. So they're making no money. So by getting to the World Series, they're all about to get extra money. And you know what that team did? That team voted a full World Series share to the Jimmy Fund. Wow. A very unselfish act by that team to do it. So Mike Andrews, who was the second baseman on that team, eventually, when he retired from baseball, he helped run Dana-Farber and was part of that staff for a period of time. So last night, because of the connection with Dana-Farber, you know, Jimmy Fund, the 67 Red Sox and the whole thing, and Mike Andrews was a part of that team, they decide that for the ceremonial first pitch, they're going to have a cancer survivor whose route in life took them through Dana-Farber to throw out the first pitch. And Mike Andrews is going to be the one to catch it. So I don't know, what's Andrews now? Andrews has got to be, what, 73, 74 years old now? So he goes in behind the plate. He's all set. Boom, boom. And the young man throws the pitch, and he misses by a mile. And there's a camera guy standing, taking pictures with the 67 Red Sox team out there behind him. And he throws the ceremonial first pitch, and the ball goes flying in, and it hits him below the belt. Square.
Yeah, the reason why I kind of waited and waited and waited to tweet it last night, I was going to go with the comment, two balls, no strikes. So I was kind of wondering, I don't know if that was tasteful or not. I mean, I got a good laugh out of it, but I felt bad for the guy. And he was wearing shorts with not a lot of protection downstairs.
Yeah, no, I mean, and unexpected.
Yeah. Oh, he didn't expect it. Yeah, that ball went, looking at the screen, yeah. No good, wide right.
Yeah. I mean, it was.
And then they had the camera shot of who threw it, and he was just kind of, he's like, he's kind of gritting his teeth.
Yeah. Yeah. It was not pretty. It's not pretty.
But yeah, that didn't take long to catch fire on Twitter last night.
No.
Without Twitter, we would have had to wait till midnight to watch it on SportsCenter.
Well, based on the ratings, that's not happening for a lot of people lately. So, yeah. But, yeah, that happened last night. Then there's going to be another 50th anniversary that's, you know, not so pleasant for the organization, which is tomorrow. Billy Conigliaro and his brother Richard, Richie, who were part of the ceremony last night, are going back to the ballpark tomorrow night. They're either unveiling a plaque or there's some ceremony to recognize Tony Conigliaro, their brother. And it was 50 years ago tomorrow. That's why they're going to do it tomorrow. 50 years ago tomorrow, he got hit in the eye with a pitch from Jack Hamilton. Now, he made a couple of comebacks along the way, but it essentially ruined his career. And eventually, he died of a heart attack at 45. The job Jerry Remy has now as the analyst for the Red Sox TV network, Conigliaro had just finished the interview for that job, and it looked like he was going to get it, and he had a heart attack on the way home. He's only 45 years old. So, yeah. So that's all coming up.
So I shared. So I shared this last hour on the show. I just want to let you know about this quick. We talked about last Thursday's show with Spider, you and Spider, on for the whole hour. I was checking our numbers on our podcast. Turns out, hour two last Thursday, you and Spider, that hour most listened to hour since we posted podcasts on both iTunes and Google Play. Big numbers.
Wow.
Yep. Yep. So those who haven't had a chance to hear it yet, you're a big-time Penn State fan, get to our podcast page, stevejonesshow.com, or subscribe to our podcast on both Google Play and Apple Podcast app. Check it out. So I wanted to share that with you.
Very nice.
Yes.
I have no idea what that means, but very nice. Sounds good.
It is good. We'll take it.
Very good. So, all right, we'll take a break. Come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Well, Major League Baseball, which I thought did a great thing last year with the Fort Bragg game with the Braves and the Marlins, won better this time. I think the move to put a game at the Little League World Series is ingenious. I have no idea who came up with the idea. I have no idea who proposed it. In the end, they had to approve it. But it is one of the more ingenious things I've seen an organization do, where you're taking something that is beloved, the Little League World Series, adding the element of where those youngsters would love to go, Major League Baseball, and Major League Baseball players who have been where the Little Leaguers are, and putting it in Williamsport at Bowman, where, for example, Andrew McCutchen began his professional career, was in Williamsport. Carson Kelly of the Cardinals and Luke Voit of the Cardinals, both along the way, played games in Williamsport as members of the State College Spikes. Tom Prince managed in Williamsport, and he's one of the bench coaches for the Pirates. Tom Prince managed in Williamsport. So you got all these connections. It's just really neat the way the whole thing's come together, and to have the youngsters get a chance to see the big leaguers. Just tremendous. Now, there'll be a couple little things that they'll have to get used to. The dugouts are major league regulation because they redid that. The bullpens are really nice. Now, the field is outstanding. Major League Baseball paid for that field to be installed in Williamsport. there'll be a couple things they have to get used to. One is, yeah, the hitting background is in center field, but there are no seats out there. It's after that, it's over the left field wall, a little bit of an area, road, a house, and a lot of trees. And over right field, you've got what they use as a parking lot, and then, of course, the community center. Now, what's neat, though, is when they all pull in on the buses, they'll go right by the original Little League fields. When they make that left turn into the parking lot, they'll go right by the Carl Stotts fields, the original Little League fields. And there's a statue that's beyond the outfield that would be in not quite dead, maybe more right center, but it's right at the corner of in the parking lot. As a tribute to Carl Stotts in Little League. And they'll see that, but they'll have to get used to, even though there'll be a hitting background, they're going to have to get used to depth perception because, look, you know, if you wander a little bit, instead of seats out there, you've got nothing. Trees, things like that. So that'll be different. Walls are about 15 feet high there. It is symmetrical, so that's pretty easy to handle. And there are no tricky caroms out there either. So there'll be a couple things they'll have to handle that are different. But that's coming up on Sunday. And I think just the linkage between the two, and you've got little leaguers from nine different countries, little leaguers. Eight on the international side, and the United States, of course, on the American side. It's going to be great for them. And not only that, it turned out that sponsorship-wise, between the little leaguers, you know, the players, the managers, the other coaches, team sponsors, team families, team captains, and the parents of the players and so forth, and corporate sponsors. Some thought that there would only be about maybe 100 to 150 tickets available for the general public. Actually, there are about 900 available, which is really nice. It's a nice percentage. It's worked out really well. Really well. I'm impressed. So that's coming up this week. Again, just the marvelous linkage between the two. I don't think you can say enough about that. So whomever came up with the idea, all the credit in the world to them. All the credit. That's a big time wow in my book. And I think it's going to be something that the little leaguers will never forget. And I think it's something the major leaguers aren't going to forget.
And we'll definitely keep a close eye on it here, Central Susquehanna
Valley. Well, you're going.
I will be there. And also, the Seawinds Grove High School drumline will be there on Sunday night. Jeremy Hummel tells us that they're going to play before the game and in between the innings. So check it out. ESPN Sunday night at 7. Hopefully the drumline will get some good TV FaceTime.
I hope so. And now, if for people wondering if I'm going to be there, well, the Pirates are playing the Cardinals there. I'm actually in Pittsburgh Sunday night. We have Deathmatch 2017 coming up at Chartiers.
You'll be celebrating your victory while the game is on Sunday night.
Jack Ham and I will be facing Ron Moeller and Mike McGinley. And then Jack and I have to speak at the Duquesne Club on Monday. There is no greater thrill to be at the Duquesne Club, looking at everyone realizing you're the poorest person in the room.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our sports bozo of the day. It's amazing how there's no shortage of these. And we'll start with the Bucs offensive line. Tampa Bay Buccaneers continued the tradition of their annual rookie dinners Wednesday night in Jacksonville. For the Bucs offensive line, that meant hitting up Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. The tradition calls for the rookies of each position to foot the bill for the group meal. As you can imagine, things got a little dicey when a $26,000 bill showed up for the offensive lineman and two rookies, Corin Kervin and Cole Gardner, were told they had to pay it. That was until the group revealed it was a prank. The dinner ended up costing actually $3,000. And if you follow any of the guys on social media, including former Nittany Lion Donovan Smith, he posted on a video in his Instagram account showing the bill of $26,357.31. Rookie dinner, thanks. But it was all a joke. It was a fake bill that Smith tweeted. He said, "We tricked the rookies." Best part is the veterans told the two rookies, both undrafted free agents, that they would be picking up the tab. It was actually their treat. "We didn't have to pay for anything," Kervin said. "We were shocked at first when we saw the bill. We thought we're not going to make it here." But at the end, knowing they paid it was actually pretty cool of them. And by the way, Hard Knocks was not there for the dinner. Hard Knocks is, this year, it's the, it is Tampa Bay. So there you go. That's our sports bozo of the day. You probably have seen the Penn State basketball schedule. Now it's out. And there's really nothing in here that surprised me at all in looking at it, but because you knew you had to compress the schedule. I also knew that with Fox Sports 1 now involved, you probably could be expecting to play any day in the week. Well, it turns out they are literally going to play every day during the week. So on that schedule, I mean, they've got the non-con games and so forth. But something I tried to point out when the schedule came out is people have talked about the early schedule and like, "Oh, it's an NIT schedule." Look, you need to wait until the Big Ten schedule comes out. Because now, from November 20th through December 9th, these are your games. Through a 3-week span. Pitt in Brooklyn. Either Texas A&M or Oklahoma State the next day. Oral Roberts. At North Carolina State. At Iowa. Home with Wisconsin. Home with George Washington. Now, does that sound a little different now that you add in Iowa and Wisconsin in that picture? Sounds a lot different, doesn't it? So they'll open with Campbell on Friday the 10th. Then they got Fairleigh Dickinson on November 12th. 15th, Montana. That's part of the Barclays tournament. Columbia on Friday the 17th. So Campbell, Fairleigh Dickinson, and Columbia are all surrounding Penn State football home games. Then they go to the Barclays Center for Pitt on the 20th. Then either Texas A&M or Oklahoma State the next day on the 21st. Oral Roberts, which is also part of the Barclays tournament, but that'll be in the Jordan Center on Friday the 24th. At North Carolina State on the 29th. Saturday, December 2nd at Iowa. Monday, December 4th, home with Wisconsin. George Washington at home on Saturday the 9th. Then after finals week, they go to Fairfax to play George Mason on Sunday the 17th. Home with Binghamton the 19th. Home with Ryder the 22nd. Home with Coppin State the 30th. Then back into the Big Ten on Tuesday, January 2nd at Maryland. Northwestern is in the Jordan Center on Friday, January 5th. At Indiana on Tuesday the 9th. home with Nebraska on Friday, January 12th. Then home with Minnesota on Monday, the 15th. At Northwestern, but actually at the Allstate Center in Rosemont on Saturday, January 20th, because they're redoing Welsh Ryan Arena. At Ohio State on January 25th, a Thursday. Home with Rutgers on Saturday, the 27th. At Michigan State on Wednesday, January 31st. Then we get to February. February 3rd, Iowa at the Jordan Center. It's a Saturday. Wednesday, February 7th, Maryland at the Jordan Center. At Illinois on Sunday, February 11th. Thursday, Ohio State at the Jordan Center on the 15th of January. 18th of February, Sunday at Purdue. Wednesday, February 21st, home with Michigan. And then Sunday, February 25th at Nebraska. And then it's the Big Ten Tournament, February 28th through March 4th at Madison Square Garden. So that's how it's going to play out. Nothing in there surprises me about it. I knew it would be compressed. I knew with Fox Sports being in there, they was going to bring to the table a different kind of schedule. There are two Friday night games in there for Penn State. They also have two Monday games in there. Some Saturdays, some Sundays. They literally do play every day of the week. Also, when we had Jim Delaney on the show, remember I asked him that question, Sean, about whether the early weekend, how closely would he be watching that with the idea of some permanence in the Big Ten schedule? Because for many, there's a perception that the college basketball season really gets going after the college football playoff is over with and then kicks into another gear right after the Super Bowl. I said, how do you get interest in the early season? I said, you have two conference games. How close are you going to watch that? And he said, I'm going to watch it very closely. And if you recall, when I asked him the question, you could tell in his answer, he took off with that. And it was really anxious to talk about that. And I think you're going to see that weekend surrounding the Big Ten football championship. I think that weekend's going to be the weekend. They're going to do this every year and play those two games within 48 hours. And as I pointed out when they announced Penn State, NC State on Wednesday the 29th, I said, look, they said Penn State will get the Saturday, Monday Big Ten games. And they did. They got Saturday at Iowa and they got Monday at home with Wisconsin on December 2nd and 4th, respectively. So that's the schedule. And again, the non-con, that stretch gets a little different perspective to it when you're looking at it like, oh, Campbell, Fairleigh Dickinson, Montana, Columbia. Yeah. And then they also got, at the end, they got Bingham, they got George Mason, Binghamton, Ryder, Coppin State. George Mason's Dave Paulson's team, by the way. But look at the middle part. Pitt in Brooklyn. Texas A&M or Oklahoma State in Brooklyn. Oral Roberts at North Carolina State, at Iowa, home with Wisconsin, home with George Washington. It's a little different perspective when you look at it as to what they've done with that. Much different perspective.
Well, it's going to be exciting to see those core freshmen, now sophomores, and you had those handful of games where it was just so close in the triple overtime in Indiana. that just popped into my head. And it's just games like that where they had to really fight through last year, and I think that could that can come back to be to their benefit this year in case they're, you know, put to the test, put to the grind, is, you know, what you're going to do here with you know, ball your possession, shot clock off with under 10 to go.
Well, I know some people have talked about how close together some of the games are. You know what? It's difficult for everybody, but you know what? Players would rather play games. Okay? So you can either practice on Friday night, January 5th, or you can play a game. If you give the players the choice, they'll tell you, we'll play the game. They'd rather have the game than the practice. So, Now, the other part, too, is next year, there is a possibility. We'll see what the NCAA wants to do with it. But the NCAA might open the season. Now, you're allowed to open it on a Friday night, which is what Penn State's doing. There's been some talk that they might open the door to opening on Tuesday. So 3 days earlier. Just to give everybody a little more scheduling flexibility. That's fine. So there it is. That's the schedule, or as Christopher Walken would say, schedule. And the Eagles play the Bills tonight, right?
That is correct. Yeah, pregame will be at 6 over on Eagle 107. Merrill and Mike will have it at 7.
I mean, I might watch 5 minutes of it. There's certain reasons things are done, which I understand. But like growing up, back in the 20s, they just invented TV. Growing up, first preseason game would come on. Man, I mean, I'd be watching preseason games, trying to get a read on everybody, the whole deal. Now, no interest. You know, I mentioned Peter King was at the Spikes game last night. Well, Peter King was there because he was in White Sulphur Springs yesterday in West Virginia, which is where the Texans are training. And the Patriots and the Texans had a scrimmage yesterday. Well, for the coaches, that is exponentially more beneficial to them to have something like that than is the preseason game. And the preseason is essentially giving you the battle for position spots 39 through 45. That's it. So, and the fans know it. And I know 26 teams have reduced their preseason prices. Some of them, for example, like the Giants, are half price on tickets. But I'll tell you what they didn't reduce the price of: parking. You don't sit there and go, it's a preseason game. I'm sorry, you get the, you know, guess what? You get to park for half price. No. It's amazing what a premium is put on parking in everything, from downtowns to stadiums. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
Sunbury Motors Lincoln continues to make American luxury affordable. Sunbury Motors Lincoln has 2017 Lincoln MKZs starting at $40,950 or finance for 0% financing for 60 months or 1.9% for 72 months. Many think brand new Lincoln Continentals will cost them $60,000. Not at Sunbury Motors Lincoln. 2017 Lincoln Continentals start at just $46,15. Sunbury Motors has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915. And the time is now to see just how remarkable the entire Lincoln lineup is. At Sunbury Motors Lincoln, you can buy a $47,000 Lincoln MKX for only $43,715. American luxury is affordable. Do yourself a favor and head out to Sunbury Motors Lincoln in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburylincoln.com.
So Fairfield, Connecticut leading New Jersey, what, 6-2? What, fourth, fifth inning up at South Williamsport?
Top five.
Watching a little bit of the game. He did a pan on the stands.
Mm-hmm.
There was the suit. All right. Yep, having his, quote,
no, wait,
meeting.
He said he was going to South Williamsport, but he was going to pass through there.
He said he was having his meeting. And once again, snagged on national TV. Big bowl of popcorn, jumping up and down. I have no idea who he was rooting for. So, that was our guy. Yeah. Good to see him take an interest in sports, like to take a work day and go up there like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. As opposed to taking vacation days when he's supposed to be having a work day. It's like,
but 8 days out from Friday Night Football week number one, you'd think you'd be, maybe have your nose in the roster right now instead of watching a baseball game. Is that the wrong way for me to look at it?
Go to practice, check out some tape, something. Instead of people watching at the Little League World Series. I don't get it. Yeah. Then he goes to a Bucknell practice and it rains. He acted as if that's the only Bucknell practice they're having in the preseason. Yeah. You can go back. They do practice other days. He was in there complaining about it rained on the practice. And I'm thinking to myself, well, is that the only one you're going to? That's it? We're done?
He did get to a Shikellamy practice earlier this week. He did get to one.
Yeah, and he complained about people being in Hawaii. So he countered by going to South Williamsport. But it's underway. It's a great event. Boy, they got to play a lot of baseball to get to this point, though, don't they? You're telling me it's a team from South Korea, Japan, Mexico, Venezuela, Italy, Walla Walla, Washington, California, Grosse Pointe, Michigan, Sioux Falls, South Dakota. It's the first time South Dakota's ever been in, right? Fairfield, Connecticut, New Jersey. Who are the southern teams, southeast teams?
You got North State Little League. That is Greenville. Greenville, North Carolina, representing the southeast.
Very nice.
Southwest is the Lufkin Little League, and they are out of Lufkin, Texas.
Yeah.
Southwest. And the West team, Santa Margarita, and I believe that is... Yes.
California.
Rancho, Santa Margarita, California. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This Jersey team, they hit 10 home runs in regionals alone. So, I'll see if they can get out of this... See if they can get out of this jam, not go down 0-1 and going into their second game on Saturday.
So, you have Mexico, South Korea, Japan, Italy, Canada. All right. So, that's... five.
Okay. Yep.
Who else do we have over there?
You also have a team out of the Dominican Republic, which is representing the Caribbean.
Yep. Okay.
Yep. And you also have out of Latin America, you have Maracaibo, Venezuela.
Right. I mentioned. Okay.
Yep.
Yep.
And also for, the team out of Mexico is from Reynosa, Mexico. Guadalupe Kelly Little League.
Now, is there a European entry, which is usually an Air Force base or something?
The European team, the Europe-Africa team, that is being represented by Italy.
Oh, Italy.
Yes,
okay.
Emilia, Italy, and that'll be their second straight. This is their second straight year in the tournament.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. And the Australia team, they are from Sydney.
Oh, okay. And they finished their deal up back in... what, February?
Yeah, they're usually the first team. They're the first team that qualifies every year since Australia became. Every year there will be a team from Australia coming to Williamsport.
Right, because it's summer down there during that time. That's the reason why. Well, that's really cool. They're here. I hope they have a great time on Sunday night. They get to meet and then watch Major League Baseball players play. And I think what you'll find is that the Major League players are going to treat them like gold. I mean, they're going to go all out here on this. This is one of the great outreach things I've ever seen any league do. This is really cool. They're doing this. It's great for Williamsport, but I think it's really great for Major League Baseball. It's great for Little League, that linkage. I mean, look, these guys all played Little League baseball. And several of them have played on this field. Andrew McCutchen began his career there. Carson Kelly's played there. Luke Voigt's played there. Tom Prince managed there. It's really neat they get to do this. I told you the story. Ron Moeller said, hey, why don't we go to the Pirates game on Sunday night? This is a couple weeks ago. I said, Ron, that's the night they're in Williamsport when I'm in Pittsburgh. I said, my timing isn't quite right. It's like, we'll get a box. I'm like, no, we can't.
We are your home for the Philadelphia Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.